Tell me, though, with regards to this Australian, Peter Ramster,
yeah.
What made his work, as far as you're concerned, that important?
Well, he what Ramster did, he decided that there were, he had two or three female regression subjects that had been coming up with some very interesting information about past lives, all of which were based in Europe. And none of these women had ever been outside. They were Australian women, and they'd never been outside of Australia, or certainly not been to Europe. So he's an extraordinary man, Ramster, and his interest was piqued, and he thought, well, you know, now this is something that really would be quite impressive if we could verify any of this information they're coming up with over here by taking them over to Europe. And what was extremely lucky for us all with Ramster is that his lifelong passion, apart from this, has also been making films and documentaries. So he put his own documentary crew together and brought three of these best subjects over to Europe back in the 70s, basically to see if the detailed memories they'd had back in Australia matched the facts on the ground when they got over to Europe. And there's two cases in particular that I emphasize in the Little Book of the Soul. One of them involves a lady called Cynthia Henderson, who had recalled the life of a girl called Amélie de Cheville, a young French girl in late 18th century France. And she had remembered in France, back in Australia, she'd remembered being brought up in a quite impressive-sized chateau in Normandy, just outside the town of market town of Flers in Normandy. And she gave quite impressive details of the nature of the house and what life was like there and what the house looked like in terms of its doors and windows and the nature of all the grounds. There was a lake in the grounds and various.
So maybe she sees a painting and remembers it.
Well, the chances of that, because this isn't a particularly well-known place.
Okay.
What they found when they got over to, when they came to France, bear in mind also that they had to find the place. You know, this had just been a painting. How on earth would she know where it was? What they did was they took her to the center of Flers, because obviously under trance back in Australia, she had recalled that it used to take them about an hour by horse-drawn coach to get into the center of Flers from the chateau. So they took her to the marketplace in Flers, and they said, okay, we'll try and find your way back out again to the chateau. And back in Australia, under trance, she'd mentioned a rough idea of the direction. She said he used to go north out of the town, hit the main road, I think going to Rouen, I think it was, turn right there, you go up a long hill, you got to the top of the hill, there's a load of woods on the left, you drop down after that, and you took a turning off to the left, and it was down through there. And indeed, they came out, and none of them had ever been to France before. They didn't know this area at all. And there they were, just going on the word of a woman, you know, who said she'd lived there several hundred years before. And the journey out of Flers was pretty much as she described it. They dropped down this hill, took a left off the road, went through the forest. They then got to a new development. Of course, things have obviously changed in 200 years, and they got to a new development, and they couldn't find their way through it properly, and they thought, well, this is it. You know, and she was struggling to work out what to do, but they managed to find their way around this new development and got to the other side, and she felt that she was back on track again. And they came around a corner, and they saw this long wall, and she said, I'm absolutely sure this is it. I think we're getting close. She was very, very emotional, obviously, by this stage, because, you know, this had been building up for some time. And, you know, these people, they have these memories, and they're kind of, they think they're real, but when it actually then gets proved to be real on the ground, it's a totally different thing. And they went up, and there was the chateau exactly as she described it, but it had sustained a lot of bomb damage in the war. So it wasn't inhabited anymore. It wasn't a well-known place particularly. And it looked exactly as she described it back in Australia. The grounds were the same, the lake was there, the particular doors and the turret that she described at the back were all exactly as she described them. And, you know, she broke down, understandably. You know, she was just so fascinated to realize that those memories were real. And but there were two other things that are probably even more impressive on this case. First of all, she said that they regularly used to go to a holiday home near Mont-Saint-Michel on the coast to the west. And they went there, and again, she led them around lots of little back roads on the coast until they found this place, which was, again, as she described it, it was a private house, and it had a chapel in the grounds. And she said the chapel had a particularly quite an unusual hexagonal stone font, and it had bluey-grey slate tiles on the floor in the chapel. And again, they managed to gain access to this private little chapel. You know, it's a private place, not open to the public as far as I know. You know, not well known again. And there was the hexagonal stone font and the blue and grey tiles on the floor, again, exactly as she'd described them.
That's incredible.
But what's even more incredible, then, the final twist on this Cynthia Henderson story, is that back in Fleur, they got a young local man, obviously a fluent French speaker, to sit there and Ramster put Cynthia into trance. And then he tried to get there, because he'd had a few cases before where people had spontaneously in trance started talking in other languages. In fact, what was interesting is he'd even had some people remembering ancient Egyptian lives talking in what would appear to be the language of the time, which, of course, we've never understood how the ancient Egyptians spoke. And in fact, it's a bit tantalizing because Ramster talks about wanting to follow that up back in the 70s and or early 80s. And
oh, that's, see, that's a good point, because it was not Arabic at the time, was it?
Absolutely not, no. But I don't know what came of that, because he had tapes of that, obviously. But anyway, so this young man managed to start conversing with Cynthia in French. And from her normal Australian accent, she went into fluent French with a perfect French accent, often archaic, using archaic terms that aren't used anymore, but would have been used back several hundred years before. And sometimes he spoke in French and she answered in English. Sometimes he spoke in English and she answered in French, always going backwards and forwards. Apparently, this was not just oui or non. You know, this was detailed conversations where it was absolutely clear that she understood exactly what he was saying to her. And this went on for some time, and the young man himself was absolutely gobsmacked by the way she was able to speak French in trance in the way that she did. And, of course, the next morning they went into the market in Fleur, and Ramster makes the point, you know, there she was again, you know, trying to make herself understood with pidgin English and lots of gesticulation, just like the rest of them. You know, and they established she had had probably, I gather, a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, of some very basic French tuition when she was 12 years old, and that was it. And there she was, speaking perfectly fluent archaic French. Now, Ramster's cases aren't very well known, unfortunately, outside of Australia. But I'm doing the very best I can to resurrect them and make them better known, because they are absolutely fantastic.
Why do you think that his cases, and he in particular, aren't being splattered all over the place?
Well, I don't know. I think it's just one of those things that sometimes this incredible work just gets lost, especially if it isn't, you know, it didn't come either out of the UK or the US. But as I said, I mean, you see, the documentary that Ramster put together was shown. I know it was shown once on terrestrial television, because that's all they had then, back in the, I believe, in the late 70s or early 80s, certainly in this country. It may well have been shown over there in the States. But it was just shown once, and I've met a couple of people who have seen it, and they confirm everything that I talk about and that's in Ramster's book, and they said it was absolutely incredible. And in fact, I've been in touch with Peter Ramster in Australia for some time now, and what I would like to do is to try and persuade him that we can re-release this stuff on DVD, because I think people would find it absolutely fascinating now. But unfortunately, he's had a personal tragedy about a year ago, and from what I can tell at the moment, he and his wife have sort of gone into the outback for a period of seclusion, so he's not been contactable for about a year. So I'm hoping that A, that he's okay, but B, that the universe will decide this is an important thing to release again at some point.